skill from Lionel Messi, surging forward with real menace here. Brilliant from Messi. Oh, what a goal that is! And the whole of this ground stands and applauds.
Lewandowski goes through it again. Oh, he just can't do it! You just cannot be that good! That is an amazing goal! The fastest hat-trick in the history of the Bundesliga. Clobbered that one right into the corner of the net to make it 5-1.
For Alex Sandro, he's going to get there. He cuts it in. Higuain at the chest. Mandzukic off the chest and a goal. Mario Mandzukic, as good as you will ever see in a European Cup final, has tied the game.
You're listening to Bail Me Out, the European football podcast on URN.
Hello there and welcome to Bail Me Out, our European football podcast here on University Radio Nottingham, back after an extended winter break. It might as well have been a World Cup in there. I'm David, your new host for the show, and I am joined by Rhys, Jeremy and Ollie, and we are going to talk all things European Cup related. So let's get straight into the action. Let's have a look at the English teams. Five English teams made it to the knockout stages of the Champions League, and it looked for a while like at least four of them had a great chance of going through, and maybe that's not quite the case. So the first one to play their second leg was Liverpool, drew 0-0 at home with Porto. We have a resident Liverpool fan in the studio.
Hello.
Should we gloss over that game as it was a 0-0? Absolutely not. It saw Iker Casillas keep a European record clean sheet. I think it was, what, number 50-something or yeah. Something insane. And Liverpool didn't really have to do very much, but then such is the grace that you get when you win the first leg 5-0.
Yeah, they were tested a couple of times, mostly from distance, however, which was promising to see that for once Liverpool were able to attempt to try and shut the opposition out from closing down, which has been a problem, I think, especially this season, especially we saw in the United game, obviously, with Lukaku proving a menace for us at the back. Lee said about that, the better. But yeah, overall, it was a promising game, although it was one of those matches where you could tell almost straight away that Liverpool was... It was very weird. Klopp, half of Klopp seemed to be like focusing on the game against Man United, in the sense that he started off by resting a couple of the key players, namely Salah, but he was then playing, you know, other key players like Firmino. But then halfway through, he brought Salah onto the pitch and brought off Firmino for Danny Ings. It was a very inconsistent way, but a draw was fine for Liverpool. It was what we needed. We got it over the line at home. But I'm not confident about the next leg, which I'm sure we'll come on to in a bit.
I think in terms of that Liverpool game as well, I think the most promising thing for them is the fact that they kept a clean sheet, even though Alberto Moreno was playing. That's two clean sheets, I think, in both legs. And I think that's definitely one of the most pleasing aspects for Liverpool, because that's been their problem all season, really. One's doubting the quality that they've got up front.
Goals.
Exactly. I mean, we saw that game against Manchester City earlier on in the season where they rightly beat them. Like, they played them off the pitch, really. So, yeah, no one's doubting in that side of things, and if they can continue keep up the sort of defensive solidity that they showed against Porto in these two legs, then I think they've got every chance of potentially causing an upset again.
Well, we'll talk more about that Liverpool-Manchester City draw in a bit. 8-4 on aggregate currently to Manchester City, so it looks like that might be a high scorer. On the night that Liverpool went through was PSG 1, Real Madrid 2. A little bit of controversy there with Verratti's sending off for something that nobody's quite sure what it was.
Was it dissent, I think, was the official reason
something
given, or
like
something
that,
along those lines? I mean, that's to be fair, that's usually the most open-ended reason that you can have, because only the referee and the player will ever know what was said.
Well, until they bring in...
Bring in other witnesses, I know, but like between them, obviously, they can set when it comes down to witnesses.
But it was a Ronaldo goal. Cavani did equalise, but Casemiro's goal in the 80th minute made the aggregate score 5-2, and don't really think PSG were coming back from that. Especially without Neymar, indeed. What do we make? Is that an unacceptable PSG performance?
I personally think so. Yeah? I mean, when you think of PSG, you think of the managers that they've sacked in recent years. The main reason for doing so is because the Champions League is all they care about. Everyone knows they're going to win the French League pretty much every season. The quality that they've got in that team, it's compared against the quality of the other teams. I mean, you've got the likes of Lyon and Marseille and Monaco maybe, but other than that, there's not really anyone who's going to challenge them. So the fact that the manager is sort of judged based on how he performs in the Champions League, seeing them go out in this fashion is pretty unacceptable, especially considering how poor Real Madrid have really been this season. I think, to be honest, it's quite rare to say this, and when you consider Real Madrid's rich history and how well they've done in this competition in recent years, but it's probably one of the biggest upsets of the round, especially a 5-2 aggregate scoreline. A lot of people tipped PSG to win the Champions League. I think it was between them and City. They've been the two form teams in Europe. So,
yeah, I don't think this round had a huge amount of shocks. There's one that we'll come on to in a minute.
We'll come on to that, I'm sure. I'll come on to that with happy glee. But I mean, I agree with Ollie on that though as well. Like, it was, I think this was probably the best year we've seen for a long time. Real Madrid have been there for the taking for a team. They aren't strong. They aren't solid. Ronaldo's, you know, he's starting now to get back into form, which is what he has done the last year. I remember watching something with Guillaume Balague, and he was saying how Ronaldo for the last 2 years now seems to have this trend of he starts off the season slow, but when it comes to the finals and the end of the season, he really ups his game once again. So it's sort of, maybe that's something about the fact that he's aging and, you know, he can't potentially keep it at the highest level like he used to. More as well, he's playing now as a left forward or a left striker, really, no longer a winger, I think, as well. But other key players did step up for Real Madrid, it has to be said, this game. Marco Asensio, who I will have raved endlessly about in terms of how much quality that young Spaniard has, he was very influential for them this match. Also, some of the more underrated players for them as well. Lucas Vazquez had a very important match as well for them in this game. PSG, though, I mean, Unai Emery's time is up. There's no denying, in my view, he will be gone by the end of the season. If he isn't, then what on earth is going on at PSG? They've spent that much money.
Yeah, I was going to say, they can always splash some more cash and do
they
a Man
can,
City.
But it's more the fact that when you look at it, you know, they have spent so much money. Okay, yeah, Neymar was injured, but they had Angel Di Maria coming in instead of him. That's hardly the worst replacement in the world.
Exactly.
It's sort of very much, I mean, last year when Monaco pulled off that amazing feat and won the French League, that was seen as a big upset, and Emery sort of was very much then, you know, one last chance. If you can win the Champions League this year, okay, all be forgiven. Hasn't been this year. They will walk the league because they're up against grape farmers. It's not exactly going to be a tough task for them, but honestly, how on earth it seemed very tactically naive, I thought, from the way they set up.
They didn't really have much of a chance, though, coming into that second leg, I don't think. They'd sort of thrown it away in that first leg, and even though they had an away goal, which meant a 2-0 win would have won them the game, how many teams do you see going to the Bernabeu and winning 2-0?
I mean, Barcelona. I think, considering their form this season, I definitely think they were there for the taking. I mean, this has been the worst Real Madrid's team I think I've seen in years, to be completely honest, especially with Ronaldo not firing on all cylinders. I think Jeremy's just touched on the fact that Unai Emery is definitely not going to be there at the end of the season. I'd be flabbergasted if Zidane was there as well. I actually think both PSG and Real Madrid are going to be vying for the services of Pochettino. I think he's one of the most in-demand managers.
Would he like to go to PSG?
I think
he'd prefer to go to Real Madrid.
I think that would be incredible.
But I think he's one of the most in-demand managers in the world, and PSG are definitely going to want to find a new manager.
Well, Ancelotti's still in the market. He is still. Yeah. He could return to either of those clubs. I manage them both.
I mean, we've touched on Man City and we've touched on Tottenham, so let's move on a day ahead in the calendar, 7th of March. both English teams losing 2-1 at home. Manchester City losing to Basel and Tottenham losing to Juventus. Let's start off with the former then, Manchester City-Basel.
That was a dead rubber.
Complete dead rubber, but give Basel credit.
They
played
well.
Very well, and they didn't disgrace themselves in, you know, the last 16 of a Champions League tie against a team that should have and did put four past them, you know, in the other leg.
I think there's also a stat floating around that's Lang, their one of their fullbacks, coming from his left or right back, but he's scored now in every visit to Manchester he's made or something ridiculous.
He sort of played as a right wing back.
Yeah, it was weird. This shows my amount of preparation. Is it Elmanusi?
Elmanusi.
Yeah, he was extremely good for them that night, actually, though. Although it was a rotated Man City side, it has to be said. You know, Yaya Toure got to start.
Yeah, I was going to say, Toure in the side.
Who's the Ukrainian?
Zinchenko.
Although he started their next league game.
It was an interesting team put out by Man City. I mean, it was rotated, but I mean, you got Bravo in there, you got Laporte in there.
Bravoed with that little flick that I'm sure done the rounds on everyone will have seen on the rounds on social media by now.
Well, I actually can't believe that Manchester City didn't win that game. I mean, there's actually a stat which I've just seen, which is City completed 978 passes in that game, which is the most recorded by a side in Champions League history since Opta recordings began. And when you think of that in the context of that Barcelona team of a few years ago, the Bayern Munich team, which Guardiola inherited, and you consider the team that Manchester City put out with the youngsters, the likes of Foden, Zinchenko,
that is an unbelievable
statistic.
Yeah. Like, City's B team has just set a record in condensing.
Yeah, that is absolutely mental.
That is crazy.
Well, speaking of B teams failing to do the job, Tottenham.
I think Dave and I would take great pleasure in picking this one apart.
Tottenham, who did very, very well to come back into their first leg, 2-0 down at Juventus early on, a penalty missed by Higuain for a hat-trick. Came back into it 2-2. So Tottenham 2-2 from the first leg. Great chance to go through. Two away goals against Juventus. A Juventus side that have been fairly to moderately impressive in the Champions League this season, let alone the league where they've been very good. But it was two goals in 3 minutes that did it for Tottenham. They scored early in the first half where Heung-min Song shinned it.
It was scuffy.
Scuffed. Which he did then repeat in the league against Bournemouth, which was quite funny.
Maybe he's got a new technique.
Yeah, weird. But I just quickly, before we move on from Son, actually, just very quickly, because I think he has started to get the right praise. He is actually one of the players which I think a lot of times has been underrated. I think now this season people are starting to appreciate.
Yeah, he's easily one of the best players.
He's a very phenomenal. Good player in the Premier League.
He will be a very interesting one to watch at the World Cup.
He will.
Yeah. South Korea.
One of those players that will be carrying a team, which I think we'll certainly be saying.
And of course, if he has to go and do national service for the South Koreans,
that would be a huge loss.
Yes, well, North London-based Korean
striker. What's that rule again? Is it you have to do it before you're 30?
30, yeah.
So how old is he now?
2 years of service. 28.
28.
Mm. Well, 27 turning 28, I think. But it was two goals in 3 minutes. Higuain and Dybala. A goal and an assist from Higuain. Three in the tie.
He had a good tie. He had
a very good tie.
Bar that penalty miss.
Considering he hasn't had the best of seasons as
absolutely
well.
Absolutely.
Really turned it on when it mattered.
And a little over 84,000 fans at Wembley, one of the bigger attendances of the round. And actually, they were the first English team to fail to qualify chronologically.
The thing is, this was talked about a lot, I'm sure, by other pundits and I'm sure by other groups, and we can probably just chat about it now, but in a way, Tottenham did deserve to go through. They put in a very tough
really
fight.
Did.
It's just that it was
neither
a couple
team
of
deserved
bad
to go out.
Exactly,
they?
It was just like a couple of bad decisions.
They bottled
it.
They absolutely bottled it.
They did bottle it.
This thing we're playing against the top teams in the top Europeans.
But this Juve,
3 minute lapse, it was enough in the end. And
that Juve side is not a top team in my view. This is going to sound controversial. They are not as top as they have been in years gone by, especially last year's. I think they were a lot stronger. The only reason they're doing so well, I think, this year is purely due to the fact that Buffon is just a freak of nature and will continue his brilliance for God knows how long. Chiellini had a fantastic game himself, and Paolo Dybala and Higuain, you know, they'll go quiet for a long period of time, then they'll suddenly come up and
they need one chance. And Hugo Lloris has not.
He always has a mistake in him.
I used to think he was like one of the best keepers in the Premier League, but he's sort of fallen off
he's
a cliff.
In the top three,
if you like.
I completely agree with Lloris. Yeah, a couple of seasons ago, I would have said he's the best shot stopper, best sweeper keeper in the Premier League by mile. But yeah, this season, he's made so many howlers. I mean, I know a couple of Tottenham fans and they really haven't been impressed with him this season. You just have to think, though, in the context of that game, 180 minutes of football and Tottenham lost it in 20 minutes. It was the 14 minutes in the first leg at the start of the game. I should have explained that better. But so the 14 minutes in the first game and that 4 minute period in the second game, and the rest of it, they battered them. Absolutely battered them.
Also was at fault for quite a few mistakes.
But it's not enough to do well enough.
No.
And you can have the lapse in concentration if you concede one, if you concede two, if you play poorly for 20 minutes. But to have lost 4-3, it's not embarrassment as well. That's the other thing. I will, and this might sound weird coming out of the mouth of an Arsenal fan, But Spurs can't feel embarrassed going out at the stage they have to the team that they've gone out to. If that were Basel, maybe they could be a bit embarrassed.
Yeah. If that was Seville.
Well, you
hold your horses, Joe.
You have brought us around perfectly then to the next Tuesday, 13th of March's action, and the big shock of the round, that was Roma beating Shakhtar 1-0.
Quality match.
Well, it was actually a fairly quality match. It was only decided by that one goal in the end on the night. Away goals win for Roma. Probably should have been streets ahead of Shakhtar Donetsk, but you know, those Eastern European teams, always difficult to beat. The 2-1 defeat at home, marked by a wonderful free kick. Brazilian Fred with a goal there.
Yeah.
But it was Edin Dzeko's goal. Roma, probably one of the weaker teams in the Champions League quarterfinals. But yeah, does it surprise anybody that they've reached the Champions League quarterfinal?
Not when played Shakhtar, no.
Yeah, they topped their group with Chelsea, didn't they, as well?
Yeah.
And they did remarkably well, especially their game at Stamford Bridge. So yeah, so they've had flashes, and I think they are a good side.
Edin Dzeko has established himself as a world-class player now as well. I actually think that City will be fairly gutted to have let him go, because if you think about their squad, it's it's unbelievably good, don't get me wrong. They've
are
got
you
incredible
telling me that Dzeko could add more?
Yeah, they've got incredible strength in depth, but I've spoken about this in the context of the England squad as well. They need something different if something's going wrong. They've got Sergio Aguero, they've got Gabriel Jesus, but they don't have that big
Sane,
they don't have
Bernardo
that
Silva.
But if they need a late goal, they don't have that big target man to bring on. They had Bonny, who just didn't work out. But Dzeko's been
that's an incredible sentence, hasn't it?
Hang on, no. It what Ollie makes there is a very good point, because in the sense of, like, if you're in a game like, for example, Man City, we know at the moment are just, along with Napoli, in my view, they are the two, and also Barcelona, I'll get onto that in a minute, but like, they are the three teams where you watch them play and it is incredibly brilliant to watch, like, from a tactical point of view. But then you think, okay, what's plan B, Pep? He'll change something, but it's not like, do they ever think we need to get a ball whipped in? Their tallest player, I think, in their front line is Leroy Sané at 6'2". And don't get me wrong, Sané is clearly a big, powerful player, but I don't know how well he'd be in the air. That's why, for example, we saw Chelsea this year when they've been trying to, you know, they've been playing Hazard, for example, as false nine. Conte clearly thought, well, what if something goes wrong? You know, I don't exactly trust Morata in the air. I need a target man. Then they were linked to every target man under the sun, including Dzeko, to be fair. And then they settled on Olivier Giroud, who, you know, it makes sense to try and test in the Premier League, but so is Dzeko, who that deal fell through, if I remember correctly. So he is someone that is being recognised as this good alternative option. I think it is. I wouldn't be surprised if clubs do come sniffing for him in the start of the net in the summer window.
Well, speaking of a player that clubs came sniffing in at, West Ham a few years ago had a chance to sign one Wissam Ben Yedder, and they thought he wasn't good enough for the Premier League.
We got offered him for £8 million, I think it was, a couple of seasons ago.
In the context of football prices these days,
our chairman turned them down because they said that he was too weak and would be too lightweight for the Premier League. This season we've signed Javier Hernandez, who I actually think is smaller than Wissam Ben Yedder.
But also a weirdly good striker to have been linked with West Ham at the time.
Because I think he was at Toulouse. He'd had two or three good seasons in a row. I know that because of the amount of FIFA I'd played in it.
It was more the fact, like, because the thing is, he is one of those players that had always been kind of on the peripheries of some of Europe's teams, like West Ham's, like your Newcastle's, that were sort of on the point of obviously picking him up. Mm-hmm. And then Monchi, whilst he was at Seville, then signed him, along with a whole host of players which he signed, which were fantastic deals. And it's weird. Ben Yedder's always been one of those players that's been in and out of form, but quite often they found him now as being quite handy in the sort of how they played Kevin Gamero when he was there. Doesn't always start, but, you know, in a big European match, they can throw him in off the bench and he will turn up for them, and he's kind of the inverse to what we're saying, you know, like Giroud and Dzeko are. He's taking away your target man, which they did because they brought, I think, Ganso further back and Vasquez, I think, the former player that used to play for Palermo, who was...
Oh, yeah, the Italian.
Yeah, the Italian striker that they have. They brought him off and they, you know, moved Ben Yedder into that central position. And it caused havoc, especially that second goal.
Yeah, he scored twice straight away. Yeah.
That second goal... Yeah. You and I were watching it, Reese. What on earth happened?
Yeah, it was very weird. Obviously, the United let their, you know, the first header go. and then you're in trouble from there. The attempted save from De Gea was one of the weirdest bits of goalkeeping I've ever seen.
Yeah, one of our good friends was watching, and I think he spent a good 5-10 minutes ranting about why didn't De Gea just like catch it or push it completely over rather than try and like palm it over.
Yeah, a bit of a sulk, didn't he?
He was sulking for the rest of the match. It ruined the curry night.
Yeah.
no bitterness there. Well, not in the curry, at least. Man United out to Sevilla. Biggest shock of the round.
Fully deserved, though. Like, it was absolutely just so negative from United. The way they approached the whole tie.
Was it Man United losing it or Sevilla winning it?
United losing it. I'll say instantly United losing it.
A disgraceful performance, really.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Absolutely.
And
especially
that's considering coming from a West Ham fan.
Interesting is
just a good. I was trying to think of a comeback, but I just don't have one to say.
Funny, 10 minutes before we started doing this podcast, I saw this news article on BBC Sport, and it's Jose Mourinho's. I think he's lost the plot. He's come out and he's defended his last 12 years of.
Oh, I saw. Yes. Oh, this is. He went mental, didn't he? In the post-match press conference.
Poor man, he's having a breakdown.
He said something like, I've sat here twice before and knocked Manchester United out.
Very weird comments.
Done
it with Real Madrid.
Yeah, that was
like,
it.
What?
Yeah, what an incredible thing for a manager to say.
I think he was trying to say, oh, yeah, we're out at this stage, but it's not uncommon.
The world for Man United, maybe, I think was what he was going with.
It's really just awfully phrased.
Very bold.
It was just unacceptable. I think if you're a United fan, I don't think
it's very disrespectful about his own club.
But not just that. Are you not ashamed in that they put in no effort whatsoever? They didn't try until the
80th. I think the thing with Mourinho is that Mourinho, in the context of managers, a lot of managers are praised for different things. You get some who are considered like man motivators, the likes of Conte, that's why he succeeded at Chelsea last year. Get another West Ham coming in. That's why Slaven Bilic was praised at West Ham in his first year. Mourinho was never that type of manager. He was praised for being this master tactician. That's why he won the Champions League with Porto. That's why he became Real Madrid manager. That's why he succeeded with Chelsea first time round when no other manager had with Chelsea. But this was just ridiculously bad tactics. You only had to look at Sevilla's form this season, and although they're not doing terribly in the league, but they've conceded 5 goals on I think 7 occasions or something. I read a stat the other day.
Yeah. They conceded loads of goals.
Yeah, they conceded 5 against Celta Vigo, I think, the other week. Yet Manchester United didn't bother attacking them until they were 2-0 down.
How many shots did they? I think it was a record, 50 odd shots over the two legs.
It was a record, I think, against Man United.
It was insane. It was just insane to see it.
Also, can I just say, I don't understand when Liverpool have played them earlier this season and Mourinho will have seen that they came back from being 3-0 down against us to think, oh, this is a team we can just park up the bus and they won't do anything. I mean, I know Liverpool's defence isn't great. I will hand up, you know, say that to them, but they've clearly got that determination to push on from even when it looks like it's hard for coming back against in Europe. And they are a proven, granted, Europa League team. They are always proven in European competitions. They do turn up and they are strong.
They've got to the further rounds of European competition in the last few years, so you can never doubt.
Yeah.
Never doubt.
They know what they're doing.
I mean, it was only the fairy tale of Leicester that knocked them out last year. That was last year.
Yeah, it was last year.
Before Atletico beat them.
Well, speaking of teams that you expect to be in this stage of the Champions League, Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
Nice, easy win.
I mean, against walk in the park.
Less so.
Walk in the park.
An 8-1 win on aggregate. But there was an English presence. Michael Oliver was the ref. Against Besiktas.
Besiktas did top their group, to be fair.
That surprised me so much.
Bayern Munich, who came second in their group, got Besiktas, and we might as well have done 7 of the 8 ties, then got Sevilla. Mm. Mm. Yeah, and the next round out is Arsenal, of course, because Bayern Munich played. No. Yeah. Yeah, what a weirdly easy set of fixtures to have after having come second in your group.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of double fluke, wasn't it, when we look at it? Because no one expected... Besiktas's group was
They topped their group, but they had Porto in their group.
Besiktas had the weaker group, but they were still amazing.
I remember watching the Besiktas-Porto game when Porto were at home, I think, because I had a bet on it, and I thought Porto would win that fairly comfortably. And I think they lost 3-0, and absolutely disgraceful performance from Porto.
I wouldn't call it a weaker group. I think it was quite a tough group in terms of all the teams were about the same level.
It didn't have a super club
in there, but I mean it was Monaco and Leipzig who I thought would be the two that went through, and then
Leipzig went down into Europa,
Monaco crashed out. Monaco then crashed out. awfully.
So, final tie of the Champions League game round, I should really say. Barcelona versus Chelsea.
Or Lionel Messi versus Chelsea.
Yeah. I was rooting for Chelsea. I watched the Stamford Bridge run. I just sort of wanted to see an English team do well. I thought, I don't hate Chelsea that much.
Two were in and two were out at that stage.
Yeah, and they obviously took the lead, and you thought maybe if they took a 1-0 lead to Nou Camp, there was a chance. And then obviously that massive mistake from Christensen let Messi in, score his first ever goal against Chelsea.
That one.
Yeah, speaking of people who had a good tie.
Then they're mountain to climb.
Lionel Messi with a three as well.
Three goals and an assist.
His 100th Champions League goal as well.
Champions League goal. Questions as to how on earth Courtois let him score his first from the angle.
It was horrendous from Courtois. And again, we touched on Lloris earlier on in the show and how he's prone to an error. Courtois's been very prone to an error this season. A couple of years ago, he was renowned for being one of the most solid goalkeepers in the Premier League.
The top two Premier League keepers, I think, probably we're thinking about now, are probably De Gea and Edison, really.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
A couple of years ago, a lot of people argued Courtois was better than De Gea because of his consistency, but both the first and the third goals were definitely his fault. A lot of people have even said that he could have done better with the second. I think that was a great finish, but
the first and
the third were horrendous, but take nothing away from Messi. That was one of the best performances I've ever seen in the Champions League. I was sat there with my friend who's a Barcelona fan. His family grew up in Catalonia, so he's been a Barcelona fan all his life, and he's watched every Barcelona game since he was about seven, and he said that in the context of this season, this is the best Messi has ever played. Like, in his career, this is the best football he's ever played.
Wow, so, that is a huge claim.
That is a very big claim, considering like the records he has. But to be fair, that second goal, the fact that it was a pass, I don't think anyone on the pitch saw at all. And apparently, that was also Ousmane Dembele's first ever goal.
First Barcelona goal.
Yeah. That's incredible, because I mean, I know he's been injured for quite a bit, but I'm sure he must have scored before then. Blimey.
The fans do like him, apparently, though. Again, I'm just going based off what my friend has said. But yeah, the fans do rate him. He has been turning in some good performances. But that being said, it is essentially a one-man team. I think he said in the context of last season, whilst Luis Enrique was there, he has nothing but criticism for Luis Enrique. Says he's the worst Barcelona manager there's ever been.
I've heard that.
And basically, he just relied on Messi. Messi single-handedly won the matches last season. He's doing it again this season. If he hadn't been playing in that game, then I think Chelsea had every chance. They had nothing to be ashamed of. They played very well in that game. They had the chances. Marcus Alonso hit the post. Willian had a couple of good chances, but
it was just
individual brilliance.
So yeah, I was just gonna briefly ask about that. So I did also want to ask about Chelsea. Was it an acceptable performance from them? Do you think that they'll sit here going, "Well, we went out to Barcelona"?
It could have been a what if. I think maybe if they won the tie, well, not won the tie, won the first leg at home, they would have had a huge platform to take to the Nou Camp. But I think the fact they threw it away. You know, then they had a mountain to climb, really. Then they had to go and score at the Nou Camp. There was just, you know,
their biggest regret will be not winning that first leg where they played them off the park. The second leg, they were never going to be favourites, and we've just touched upon it. It was an individual brilliance from Messi, so they've got nothing to be ashamed of in that front. But yeah, it was that first leg which cost them. The fact that they didn't come away with 3 points with that meant that they were never likely to go through.
So looking at this season's quarter-final ties, the remarkable thing is that none of the ties are really that remarkable, have to say. In full, we'll go through them in full and have a quick little chat about each game. You've got Barcelona-Roma, Sevilla versus Bayern Munich, Juventus versus Real Madrid, and the two English teams left in the hat, drawn out last, Liverpool versus Manchester City. It means that for football fans, between the 3rd and the 10th of April, we're going to have Liverpool-Man City at Anfield. We're going to have Man City v Man United on the Saturday, which will be the title decider at this rate. Mm-hmm. We're then going to have Everton-Liverpool the next day, and then we're going to have Man City-Liverpool the next midweek. I mean, park yourselves down in front of the TV, really. But
I might not. I might hide.
Well, Liverpool, one of the only teams to have beaten Manchester City this season. Only seems sensible to start with the English teams, and funnily enough, they're playing each other. Liverpool-Man City at Anfield first. Do you think that's what Liverpool would have preferred? I mean, we'll start off with a
don't come to me first, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think, if you're looking at that tie, Liverpool-Man City, Liverpool will host the first leg. How crucial is it, do you think, for them to not get played off the park, as City have shown that they can do to almost every team this... No, sorry, they have done it to Liverpool.
Yeah.
They've shown that they can do it to pretty much every team this season.
I mean, it's obviously crucial, considering Liverpool have actually done well in the Champions League this season. You look at that, the two results against Porto, and the first leg especially was absolutely exceptional. So to throw it all away in the first leg against Manchester City, considering they know that they could beat them, I think that would be the real shame, because as I've already touched upon in the show, Liverpool fans and know that they can do it. They are arguably one of the best attacking teams in the world. That front three has just been incredible this season. I don't know what Jeremy thinks about this. I can see his face.
I'm just looking at a contorting face, ever more contorting.
I am not optimistic. I will put it straight out there. I mean, like David said earlier, I think the score on aggregate between us is, let me think, is it 8-3?
8-4.
Well, that's better than I thought. The problem is, I think Liverpool needed the home game second. I think we really needed that Anfield support for the second leg, because without any shadow of doubt in my mind that we will at least concede probably two away goals at home to Man City. And then going to City, where we were battered 5-0 right at the start of the season, I mean, it's possible, and I think that we're a better team than we were at that stage of the season. We have obviously brought in Van Dijk. Oxlade-Chamberlain has now found his role within the team and is starting to work there when he was just thrown into the deep end last time. So it is possible, but I think, I mean, I would obviously want Liverpool to win, and I, with all my heart, really wants to try and go there, but I am just extremely, extremely sceptical if we are going to get anything from it. I think a solid showing, but unlike us, Man City can... I know it's a title side against Man United, and I know that they won't want to let it go for pride reasons, but Liverpool is still in a more precarious position in the league than City. City can afford to rotate some players out for the Champions League, whilst Liverpool will have to be focusing on all the matches at all fronts during that mad week.
Mm-hmm. That being said, though, I really wouldn't read into that aggregate scoreline too much. I know it was 8-4, but I remember watching the game earlier on in the season when I think it was 5-0 City, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But PTSD. I remember the first half an hour or 25 minutes of that game, Liverpool played Manchester City off the park, and then there was that Mane sending off where he kicked Edison in the head, karate kicked him in the head or whatnot, and there was all the controversy about it. I think it was a red card, we won't go into that, but after that,
only slightly old news.
But I think that scoreline flattered Manchester City, because then obviously after that they made use of their one man advantage, and after they conceded, I think, two quick goals after that, their heads went down and Manchester City turned them over. But yeah, I really wouldn't read that much into that aggregate scoreline. I think Liverpool, on their day, if they play the best, have every chance of beating Manchester City. And I know Jeremy's touched on the fact that they've still got a lot to play for in the league. But again, I think this is the competition which really matters to Liverpool fans.
Well, do you think that they've got the potential to sort of really wound Manchester City here? They're going to win the league. They've won the Carabao Cup. It was a surprise that they got knocked out the FA Cup to Wigan, although talking of things happening in form, but that's happened the last three times they've met. If Man City don't win the Champions League, will they consider this a successful season? I mean, yes, because they've walked the Premier League, but they've won the Premier League before.
I think if they go out to Liverpool at this point, they won't consider it to be that successful. I think they would rather go out to maybe Valverde's Barca, which I personally think should be, if the draw goes correct, the final, in my opinion, because that would be the ultimate clash between Pep against his old club, but also Valverde, who has turned this Barcelona team into something else. I mean, they're invincible at the moment in all competitions, it has to be pointed out. But could Liverpool do it? I don't know. We could potentially wound Man City. Mane has shown that we can physically wound their players. But I don't know. I don't know. I would say if Liverpool turn up and give it everything, we have a chance. But I really think that this is looking like it's Man City are in the hot seat and the ascendancy for this, for winning the points in this and going through.
The other tie that's probably worth talking about is Juventus Real Madrid. Possibly the best tie on paper in there. I mean, some would say Liverpool Man City has more to it because it's a local derby as well. Ish. Well, it's a country derby. Let's call it a country derby. But Juventus Real Madrid,
Repeat of last year's final.
Yeah, repeat of last year's final. Two teams that haven't been at their best this season, but could both use the Champions League as a way to get back into, you know, to consider it a successful season. Neither would have had a problem if you'd have said, you know, we'll get to the quarterfinal, we'll guarantee you that. Real Madrid will probably think they should get further than that.
Yeah, Real will.
Juve probably wouldn't mind too much.
Real have a weird stat that I saw a while ago, that whenever they play whoever they last played in a Champions League final, they do tend to win the next time that they come against them in the Champions League. It's a very weird one, I think, because they played Atletico Madrid twice in the Champions League final recently, and they've come up against them in between those two periods, and they have always beaten them in the Champions League. So it's a weird one, and I wonder if that's going to carry on them with Juventus. It's only sort of one, obviously, since they had that long drought when they were hunting for La Decima. But since they won that, it's sort of been this weird recurring stat they seem to have. Granted, on both occasions previously, it hasn't even been Atletico Madrid they've got to go up against. So it's one team, and it's their local rivals they have to keep overpowering. But still, it's one of those random stats that could be of relevance.
And somehow I get the feeling they won't have to get past Atletico Madrid this time around.
No, that's quite...
Anything else to add on Juve Real Madrid?
I think... I've spoken about it with some of the other ties as well. If you think about the two teams in the context of their league form, Real Madrid have absolutely nothing to play for. Barcelona are still unbeaten in the league. They've absolutely walked it. They've got almost 20 points on Real Madrid, I think. Juventus, on the other hand, you would have thought in times gone by they would normally sort of wrapped up the Serie A by this stage, but this season Napoli have pushed them all the way. I think they've played the same number of games, they both played 28 games. Juve sitting on 74 points at the minute, Napoli just behind on 70 points, so they're still all to play for in that sense. So with Juventus obviously focusing on the league as well, with Real Madrid purely focusing on the Champions League and perhaps even resting players in the league, I would probably say Real Madrid would go into this game as firm favourites.
Yeah, no, they're definitely chucking the league now and putting all their eggs in one Champions League basket, if you like.
So let's go around the room then and get predictions as to who we think are going through from those games. So I'll go around in each game at a time. Barcelona v Roma. Are we going all Barcelona?
Barcelona.
Yeah,
it has to be.
There's just no way.
Sevilla, Bayern Munich.
Bayern.
Yeah.
They could cause a bit more unrest than I think Roma will potentially.
I think Sevilla could potentially win the home leg. Which
maybe,
is first,
it would be a big scoreline, or like a 2-1 or a 1-0.
Yeah, and then Bayern.
Bayern just walk them.
Juve v Real Madrid.
Real Madrid.
Real. Yeah. I'm going
Real Madrid.
For
Real Madrid. Real Madrid. Yeah, I think Real Madrid just have the more quality in it, and I don't think they will. I actually think they might set out like Chelsea tried to set out against Man City, and just go to Juve and just try and take the pressure and just not concede, rather than do what they did against Spurs, which you go up early and then throw it away at 2-1. Really, at 2-1 you knew something was going to happen. Liverpool Man City, which English team is making it through to the semi-finals of the Champions League?
Liverpool. Heard it here first. Got to go out there with one of my predictions, and I think that they're the most likely to cause an upset. They played them off the park earlier on in the season. They were unlucky in the game at the start of the season with that Mane sending off. I think they've got what it takes to beat Manchester City. I think they're everything that Manchester City fear in a team. I think Manchester City have more to lose from it. They've obviously wrapped up the league, but that means now that the Champions League is a primary focus for them. No one expects Liverpool to win this game or win this tie.
I wouldn't disagree with that analysis, and I definitely agree with the idea that Liverpool are the most likely upset-causing side. I can't see them beating City over two legs, though, is the thing for me. Yeah. Over two legs. A single tie, potentially. The final, potentially, but I don't see them doing it over two legs. Any?
I would agree with that. Yeah, no, I think Man City, they're just too strong.
And over to our resident Liverpool fan.
My head says City, but I'm going with my heart, Liverpool.
Oh.
Fair enough, and that's why you should never listen to your heart, ladies and gentlemen. So let's move on to the Mickey Mouse Cup then, the cup that no one cares about.
But we deeply care about this season.
It is the Europa League. We'll start off with the English team then. Arsenal were 5-1 aggregate victors over AC Milan, 3-1 victors on the night at the Emirates to give them their third win on the bounce in all competitions, including in both legs of this Europa League tie. started off sort of weird that game. AC Milan had chances very early on, 40 seconds in or so.
Yeah, Adrian Silva. It was a bit of a scare.
And it was the story of the match, really. Story of the match is that Arsenal had one more shot than AC Milan, but as many as Arsenal put on target, AC Milan put off target, and that's really where the difference between the two teams lay.
Donnarumma had a couple of mistakes, it has to be said.
Debatable.
Well. Yeah, there was the warning signs, yeah, with the Wilshere shot.
Yeah.
That it spilled like right in the middle of their 6 yard box. Luckily, I think Bonucci was there to sort of mop up.
Yeah.
And then practically the exact same thing happened later on with the Xhaka shot that went in. Yeah.
Yeah. Although speaking of long shots, Hakan Çalhanoğlu was
unbelievable.
Start.
Yeah. For a few minutes, the Emirates was a bit nervous, and then we got that debatable
for
penalty.
A few minutes.
He's renowned for that. Çalhanoğlu, isn't he?
I remember a couple of years ago
when Payet was considered the best free kick taker in the world. Çalhanoğlu was the other.
The way he strikes a football.
Same bracket, yeah.
Incredible. Yeah.
Fantastic strike from him, gave them the lead, but Arsenal were back level within 5 minutes.
Questionable penalty.
It was not a penalty.
I think questionable is giving it too much credit. It was a terrible decision.
The fact that
there was a tiny amount of contact. There was some. Like, it's not that there was absolutely none whatsoever. Suso got booked for later in the game.
It definitely wasn't a penalty, but Rodriguez gave the referee a decision to make by putting his arm out there. It was a bit naive, a bit stupid.
But what is the point of that fifth official, by the way?
Yeah, he did nothing.
I have so many questions about them. The first is, why on earth are they on the same side of the pitch as the linesman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just geometrically an error, and I wasn't sure what the word was. but that's just an error in my mind. And secondly, what is the point? If you want VAR, just have VAR. Don't have this stupid... They won't put VAR in this competition, though, is the problem.
It's a pride thing, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
They knew they needed to do something, but like you said...
They didn't want to do the obvious thing.
They didn't want to do the obvious things. So they've come up with this genius...
So they added people with knock-off lightsabers.
They do nothing.
Do they still have the stick?
I think they do.
Have you ever seen anyone waving one of them?
Like, Welbeck fell over right in front of...
Yeah, it couldn't have been more than 2 yards.
And the ref...
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, enough on a penalty decision that wasn't a penalty, and it's pretty much...
I think, penalty or not, Arsenal would have had enough to go through, I think. And Milan, at the end, they just looked dejected and...
Well, Gattuso had left before the last 5 minutes.
It was a bit...
You have to feel a bit for them. They deserved more on the night. They didn't deserve the tie. You don't lose 2-0 at home like that.
I said yesterday... Yeah. That I could see AC Milan causing an upset, especially considering it was Arsenal, and we all know Arsenal
what
were Arsenal.
Like.
And after that first goal went in, I was like, you know what, I could be right. I should have put some money on this. But that penalty decision knocked the stuffing out of them.
Yeah, I think they...
At 1-1, there were still loads of AC Milan chances, including Kalinic.
For a long time, yeah.
Kalinic put in a couple of...
attempts.
A couple of decent headers. One admittedly went off Mustafi, didn't it?
Yeah, that was weird, that one.
But the English team make it safely through, making it 3 of 6 into the next round, into the quarterfinals of their respective competitions. Other scores in the Europa League that were worth looking at. In a game that finished 3-0 to Atletico Madrid in the first leg, a 5-1 away victory in Moscow. Very impressive. Torres, a brace, Griezmann, Niguez and Correa on the scoreline.
They are my favourites of the Europa League.
I think
they have to be everyone's
favourite.
Especially with Costa added into that squad already from... I mean, granted, they lost, who was it, Gaetan and Carrasco to the Chinese Super League, but they haven't exactly turned up there, and I don't quite... And Carrasco,
I don't think they've scored yet.
No, but I think Carrasco had also been, like, there was attitude problems within the camp that he was causing, so, like, I mean, it's probably been a blessing for them that they've got rid of him, maybe, we'll see. But, yeah, they're my favourites, and they've got, I think, certainly a winnable tie. Certainly winnable.
Well, we'll come on to that in just a moment. Bilbao, 2-1 defeat on the night to Marseille, but a 5-2 aggregate defeat there. Dinamo Kiev 0, Lazio 2, after a 2-2 draw in the first leg. People thought that Kiev might have been able to do something at home, but alas...
Did absolutely nothing.
Well, the teams that host the cities that host the European finals this season. Kiev is hosting the Champions League final.
And Lyon the Europa.
Some inexplicable reason. And Lyon, a war zone. A war zone is hosting the Champions League final. Yeah. Unbelievable. Although, yeah, it is at the stadium, or the game last night was at the stadium. Stefan de Vrij and Lucas Leiva. With the goals.
Yeah, very,
for Lazio.
Very rogue.
Fair enough.
I think that counts as rogue. I think that very much counts as.
Yeah.
The only game that went to extra time.
Yeah, that was interesting, that, because Sporting missed a penalty in stoppage time.
Minute.
That would have won them the tie.
Yeah. Wolfsburg. I think, was it Wolfsburg or Bremen?
Wolfsburg.
I was going to say legend. It probably wasn't.
Of Wolfsburg fame.
Yeah,
of Wolfsburg fame. They did, in the end, get the win, Sporting an extra time goal from Batala. Battaglia, I'll pronounce his name properly in the
good header.
Yeah, was actually a very good header. Saw that earlier today. So Victoria Plzeň got knocked out. Another team that got knocked out, much to people's surprise, Zenit St. Petersburg.
Yeah, Roberto Mancini's Zenit. Yeah. Mm. Against Leipzig, wasn't it? Leipzig, yeah, against... obviously a very good side. That was a very good tie,
last
I think.
Couple
that
of
was...
years, yeah.
Yeah. Apart from Arsenal and AC Milan, that's probably the tie around.
And given that Werner missed a penalty as well for the visitors to make it 4-2 on aggregate, you know, a 3-2 aggregate win for Leipzig against Zenit, who breezed past Celtic, but that really isn't
saying much.
A bit of a surprise there, but I think Zenit have been characteristically poor.
Yeah, they aren't as good as they were a couple of years ago when they had, for example, what was it, Hulk and Witzel in their team. That was a good team they had. Whilst now it's sort of players you have to... It is Russian players primarily they have, but it's
funny
not...
that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. It's not players that sort of, you know, you think of or are any good. Yeah, I will happily say that, considering the performance.
I mean, they lost to Celtic, didn't they?
They lost 1-0 to Celtic.
They lost 1-0 to Celtic.
Cracking goal that was, though, from whoever that was that scored for Celtic. Managed to find the only...
I don't follow Scottish football.
I can't remember his name.
It was on YouTube.
It's Celtic, isn't it, actually?
So the other two games in the Europa League last night, both played at the same time as the Arsenal game. Lyon 2, CSKA Moscow 3. A quite incredible back and forth game there, and it sees the Russians qualify on away goals. They lost 1-0 in Moscow in the first leg, and 3-3 on aggregate. And so CSKA Moscow make it through, goals from Golovin, Musa, and Vernbloom.
That first one they scored to go 1-0 up on the night was incredible. Incredible curling effort into the top corner as well.
And really, given the news that's going on as we record this podcast, it would be the only inappropriate tie for Arsenal to have gotten.
That was somehow
the most predictable thing in the world. Final tie of the round, though, probably the biggest shock of the round. Salzburg, which I can't remember whether they are allowed to call themselves Red Bull or not because of the laws or whatnot, because it's not Red Bull Leipzig, it's Rasenball Sport Leipzig, Lawn Ball Sport.
I think they've even changed their badge for this.
I think they have changed their badge for it.
Oh, it's FC, so I think they call themselves FC Salzburg.
FC Red Bull Salzburg, it says.
Red Bull Salzburg.
Because Leipzig call themselves Rasenball or
Rasenball Sport, because you're not allowed...
you're not allowed two teams the same...
No, not that. You're not allowed... German teams aren't allowed to have sponsored names.
Because of the 50+1 rule, which Leipzig ignore.
They don't ignore, they just cleverly get around it.
They sidestep it.
Well, stupid rules.
Salzburg, they got their win in Dortmund first leg, and then
2-1 win on the
cracking defensive performance in the second
just
leg.
Say, this sums up Dortmund's season. They've been absolutely woeful this year.
Underachieving.
Considering like the way they started off, you know, they went, what was it, 8-9 games without even conceding a goal. It was a miraculous run for them. Then suddenly Leipzig smashed 4 past them. Then everything fell to pot for Peter Boys. And then they brought in a manager who I can't even remember his name. You know, don't think anyone's ever heard of. It's not exactly a good thing for Julian Nagelsmann, considering he is the rumoured apparent successor to this bloke at the moment, and he's going to be the manager come the summer with Thomas Tuchel taking over at Bayern, and the apparent latest rumours that have been talked about.
the Dortmund job does seem like a bit of a poisoned chalice, doesn't it?
Since Klopp.
Yeah, since yeah. Klopp left. And
Tuchel.
Because they're never going to reach the dizzying heights of 2013.
Tuchel was on his way, is the thing. I mean, Tuchel was up against, I would say, a much harder side to beat than Klopp was when Klopp was manager. But the thing is with Tuchel is that he just fell out with the new Arsenal head of recruitment. That you then bought from him. So it's a that's why everyone's saying that Tuchel, if Wenger is to go this summer, which, you know, obviously we don't know at the moment because you've started winning games again. If Tuchel...
You can hear more on the Saturday. No.
Tuchel is one of those managers that was inevitably linked, but because of his relationship with Sven Mislintat, he's not probably going to go because it would just be absolutely disastrous.
Yeah. I actually don't think it's surprising at all that we've seen Dortmund do this badly. You look at their squad and it's actually really not that good.
Did they do that badly or did they just not score? I mean, a 2-1 defeat, they didn't get hammered. They didn't get heavily beaten.
In general, though, they are not that team that we saw in the Champions League final, was it, four or five years ago? Well, you look at their squad, they've got Batshuayi up front now, who admittedly started quite well, but was so out of favour at Chelsea. Chelsea fans were slating him left, right and centre. They've got Andre Schürrle, another player who was out of favour at Chelsea. Mario Götze, who was
so bad Dortmund sent him back.
Was so bad Dortmund sent him back. And he's actually, I think recently he's been diagnosed with some illness. Mm-hmm. I think it's called myopathy. It's like a rare muscular disorder in which like he can't lose weight or something.
It's something like, I think it's a weird one. It's like his... It's almost like his body will put on weight, and no matter how much exercise he does, it takes a lot longer for it to be broken down, I think, by his body.
So he's he's just unbelievably unfit. You've got Marco Reus, so Dortmund's best player, but again, he's
legs made of glass.
Yeah, he's always out injured, hasn't done that much this season. You've got Castro, who's a decent midfielder, but is he a world beater? No. You've got Dahoud, who's, I think, a young German international.
Who the
Dortmund fans hate, and I think that they signed him from Mönchengladbach. They've gone
from Mönchengladbach, and the Dortmund fans have been on his back because he doesn't do, in their view, enough defending, but that's not how he plays. I don't understand that. Weigl, I would say, is the only kind of real gem in that team. He is a proper up-and-coming world-class CDM, but he will be snapped up, I think, in a couple of years. Sorry, Ollie.
Yeah, they've got the young guy who they signed from Manchester City as well, haven't they? Jordan Sancho. I don't think he was playing, but it'd be interesting to see how he does. Yeah, they've given him that number, which is a surprising one. He's an up-and-coming talent, which I'm interested to see. But, yeah, again, I may as well read through that whole team now in defence. Papastathopoulos, who's a Greek...
Socrates. Yeah. He's good. I will say that.
A decent player.
Will he stay there?
I could see a Chelsea or something like that going in for him in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, if they lose him, I think that really is it for them, because he's their only probably world-class player, you could say. Piszczek, he's been there for years now, and the Swiss goalkeeper, Berkey in goal, who I'm not even sure is first-choice goalkeeper for Switzerland.
Jan Sommer.
So that's really saying something. I think we've called it the upset of the round, but you look through that team and you look at their players and
it's a big name that is basically with a rotten team.
Yeah.
So speaking of the round, let's move on to the quarterfinal fixtures then. Leipzig, first team out the hat. And it's not a hat when they do it, is it? It's a weird
fishbowl.
Yeah, weird fishbowl. I think they had Eric Abidal doing the job as well.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Indeed. They will play Marseille. Arsenal will host CSKA Moscow.
Of course.
Appropriately. Atletico will play Sporting Club de Portugal. And Lazio will play the other Red Bull team, Red Bull Salzburg. Slightly disappointed that the two Red Bulls didn't meet each other.
That would be so awkward. What would they do?
Marseille and Lazio, they've got to get past.
They could.
They could.
I think both of those are winning.
Both of them very winning.
Because when these draws are announced, I think Leipzig should beat Marseille, but Marseille are, their league form's a bit iffy at the moment, but they have got some quality players. Florian Thauvin.
Don't get me started.
Florian Thauvin, you know, that failed project at Newcastle has become a revelation at Marseille again. So you never know. Along with Payet, they might pull something out of the hat there against Leipzig. I'm sure we'll talk more about Arsenal and CSK in a minute. Atletico, they're going to win that.
Probably the easiest team in the round, Sporting.
The Lazio Salzburg game, though, that is the one I think that's going to be upset. I think because Lazio are chasing a Champions League spot, and they've started to slow down in terms of the pace they've been scoring, specifically Ciro Immobile. They have very reliant on him to score, and Milinkovic Savic to be that creative force, that team. I could see it being one where, like,
their form just runs out or is just drying up at this point, and Salzburg will be really up for this, potentially seeing as a big chance for them. Because if two Red Bull teams made it to the semi-finals of the Europa League, okay, you know, it's not the Champions League, but that's massive for them as like for a for branding for like for their club and for what they're trying to do.
So you touched on you know, Arsenal, CSKA, Moscow. Anyone think there's potential for an upset there?
With Arsenal though, there's always the potential for an upset there, isn't it? It doesn't matter who you play.
Yeah, we could have had, I don't know.
You could have had anyone.
Sporting,
you could have had,
I think,
yeah. Could have had Sporting. Yeah, it's that's the thing. Like Arsenal on paper, it's again, they're the same as Liverpool. I think you're capable of beating anyone on your day. But
yeah, you think, yeah, with your Arsenal with your Liverpools, you think they'll always give you a chance, and that's the sad reality of it.
The difficulty with CSKA Moscow is, though, their back five has an average age of about 705, which does mean that they've played more than 1,000 games together. But like, that's not a sentence you normally expect to hear anywhere.
It's more the atmosphere that Arsenal are walking into, I think, is the biggest one.
I think this has got to wrap up the tie in the first leg. Hopefully, like a 3-0 at the Emirates would be huge. But
I think you might want form here, if I'm being honest.
Well, I mean, yeah, you never know. Arsenal probably would have preferred the away tie first.
Yeah.
Know what they've got to do in the home leg.
Get all
that out of the way. But having said that, CSKA Moscow have been dubious this season, and I'm not sure really about them. Obviously, I follow a bit more Russian football than most. I don't know what to make of them. I really don't.
Dark horse?
I wouldn't say dark horse, but the reason they're a dark horse is because you never know
what
you're going to get with a Russian team. And they are one of only five teams that Wenger has played more than once and never beaten.
Bad record.
Yeah.
Well, it's one loss and one draw. A 1-0 and a 0-0.
They're not even winning their league, though, are they? I think they're sitting in third, I think, at the minute, are they? I think, yeah, it's Lokomotiv Moscow.
So who Atletico Madrid just put eight past.
Exactly, and Spartak Moscow in second. Zenit St. Petersburg in fifth, actually. Yeah, CSKA
outside of the
CSKA in third place, 8 points off the top of the league. So FC Krasnodar.
Yeah, it's quite a competitive league, the Russian league, isn't it?
Sorry, that was just out of my own personal interest there. We'll touch more on that, actually, in the next edition of Bail Me Out, when we'll be looking around the top leagues of Europe, of which Russia does not count.
I was about to say.
we can give them a shout-out.
Moving on.
So let's come round final time, then, predicting the semi-finalists, then, of the Europa League. Leipzig-Marseille?
Leipzig for me.
Yeah, same. Leipzig.
Leipzig.
Leipzig all round. Arsenal-CSKA?
I think Arsenal have got enough. CSKA aren't the sort of Russian force that they've been in previous years, and I think Arsenal are better than them anyway.
No, I'm still, as I said, worried about the second leg being away, but that's the only reason I see Arsenal losing, and I'm going to go for them for the overall win.
Yeah, I'm agreed with that. Although I think potentially if CSKA win, I wonder if they might get knocked out due to some controversy that might happen with regards to the away leg. Even if they win the away leg, if there's some event that happens that causes them to have to be knocked out, they might let Arsenal back in. I think it's CSKA's for the losing.
It sounds ludicrous, but it could happen, couldn't it? Yeah.
With everything that's going on at the moment, that sort of, you know, day by day updates, I believe they've just announced that incident that obviously has triggered all this is now going to be treated as a full murder investigation. I just saw that pop on my phone.
Really?
So, whoa. Yeah.
Wouldn't that imply the guy's dead?
Heavy stuff for a football podcast, well, but apparently he's being sort of treated as if it might be attempted murder. Then I read it very briefly whilst I was trying to get to look at a football table rather than look at the news. Anyway,
always a good idea to stick away from the news. Atletico versus Sporting.
There's only one winner there.
Atletico,
favourite.
Probably the easiest tie for the round to pick that. Lazio versus Salzburg.
I think Lazio.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we said Salzburg probably caused the upset of the round anyway against Dortmund. And yeah, I've rated Lazio this season. I think Jeremy touched on Immobile, who's probably their key player. Hasn't been hitting the heights of last season and recent weeks, but yeah, still a quality goal scorer on his day. And I think it's Milinkovic-Savic. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but yeah, he's an up-and-coming starlet in European football, isn't he? He's very highly rated. I think Liverpool have been looking at him and trying to bring him in for next season. And I definitely think, yeah, he'll be going to a bigger club next season.
One other brief thing before we just finish to note. The Champions League last eight has two English teams, three Spanish teams. It's a lot of same countries having...
Two Italian teams.
And a German team. The Europa League, eight different countries represented in those eight teams. Does it just sort of go to show the slight difference between those tournaments then, given that all the nations that are represented in the Champions League are also represented in the Europa League as well?
I'll keep my view on this brief. I don't think it does. I think... this year, we've seen the big teams in Europe, actually quite a lot of them have stepped up. They really have come into force, it has to be said, this time. And there have been some draws where, you know, smaller teams... Roma, they are a smaller team, for example, compared to all the other ones. You know, some of that they've got through because they played your Shakhtar Donetsk, for example. They've been able to get through on some more, what we would probably always view as easier ties. Whilst with the Europa League, like I've touched on, there have been upsets that have occurred. You know, for example... Lyon losing their match, I thought Lyon would go through. That was a surprise one. And then we've also got, for example, Dortmund going out. You know, we would have probably, like we've said, it's not the team it once was, but we would still have probably expected them, and that's why we've got them as our shock of the round to go through. So I think it's more the ties have just gone the way that we weren't expecting in some cases, and in others, I don't know, it's some teams have just always been as strong as we thought they were.
Anyone else, some concluding remarks then?
I think in the context of the Europa League, it is refreshing to see eight different nations, and it certainly shows that in some of these lower leagues, the teams can compete. Your Russian teams, your Portuguese teams.
You're acting like Russian teams haven't won three European Cups in the last 12 years or so.
See, you had to go back to 12 years for it. That's the thing. You knew that it was going to be...
What would be the last one? 08, I think?
Was that CSKA's
winning? No, Zenit.
Zenit, right. Because I know CSKA won...
CSKA won in 05, I think.
Shavin.
Wow.
God.
In that sense, it's refreshing, but in the Champions League, there's be like that for years now, hasn't it? No one expected anything else. Everybody knows that. So the four best leagues in the world are the best four leagues in the world are the Premier League, the Serie A, the Bundesliga and La Liga.
Which is why, aside from the Premier League, we'll be talking about all of them in the next edition of Bail Me Out, which hopefully you'll be able to hear very soon. Thank you all for listening in. That was Bail Me Out on University Radio Nottingham.